It's Friday, August 7th, and this is now the 31st edition of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. This is where my son and partner, Jeremy, and I take a look at the week's news, some politics, and, you know, put on a crystal ball from different angles and take a look into the future on a variety of topics. And so we're going to start with some politics, but let me say hi to Jer first. How are you doing today?
Hey, Dad. Wow, where do we begin? Well, I know we begin with politics, but from there, well, our listeners are going to see where we take this because it was a big week.
It was a very big week. Okay, so let's catch up on the polls and see where we stand. And we remind people that there's just about 90 days to go in the presidential election, and the polls are only going to reflect what we can see right now. And what we see right now is former Vice President Joe Biden in the lead, leads overall by about 6 points on the Real Clear Politics average. But the interesting thing is that the race is clearly tightening up. Some polls have it at 3 and 4 percentage points with Biden in the lead. Others, a little bit more than that, but a far cry from the 13, 14, 15 point Biden leads that we've seen before. And so what may be going on here? Number one, I do think that Biden needs to inject some enthusiasm and some larger presence into the campaign. That's predictable. By design, he stayed low key over the summer, and you can only take that so far. And he has taken it as far as he can go. We'll start next week talking about the vice presidential nominee and whether that woman that he selects will help or hurt. Secondly, I think to some degree, you can say the president is getting what we'd call a dead cat bounce, which is not really good. It only means that he has not been hurting himself overtly as much as he normally does. Or let me restate that perhaps a lot of folks are just numb to the way he hurts himself and the way he handles himself. He's had a bad week. He had an interview with Axios Media earlier in the week, Jonathan Swan, correspondent for them. And I can't begin to describe how awful the president behaved during that interview and the untruths that he spewed. And look, I really don't want to be partisan here, but see it for yourself. It certainly did not help him. But bottom line is, I think really the reason why the race is tightening up, it's Joe Biden moving up or down. The president is stuck. He's stuck at an average of 42. Some polls have him at 44, 45% against Biden. Other polls have him at 40, 41%. For an incumbent president, these are not re-election numbers. As of today, the president continues to be in trouble. What do you think, Jer?
Well, I think that you're definitely right that the up and the down is all about Biden. Trump is stuck where he's at, and at least for now, it doesn't look like he'll move. Although today, there was a pretty shocking story that came out, and I don't know how many people have heard this, but if you have, you got to listen to it again, and if you haven't heard it, you definitely have to know about this. But Trump is quoted, and I think this was today, as you know, the headline goes, I have a lot of rich enemies. You won't see me for a while. This is in the context of him giving some talk and talking about how he's going to basically, you know, America right now relies on most of its medicine, a lot of its pharmaceutical drugs, at least the chemicals and the products that go into making them from overseas, and that he's bringing that back. He's bringing that to the United States. That's all part of that platform of bringing the jobs back. And with your point that he's stuck, and I think that's spot on, look for Trump between now and November to bring back into full gear the populist the notion that he's the populist president. And so this is just one of many, I think, campaign moves, political moves to convince his base, re-excite them that he's still in it, that, you know, he came in, he was going to clean up the mess. He was going to, you know, so-called make America great again, but he was going to fight the elite. And, you know, with this kind of quote, "I have a lot of rich enemies, you might not see me for a while," that's going to re-excite his base and potentially excite some of the independents and some of the undecided. On the Biden front, speaking of a terrible interview was, I believe it was CBS or Yahoo, and they asked him about the whole prospect of his, mental sound capabilities. And, Biden kind of blundered about being physically fit and mentally fit, and there was a very awkward exchange between he and the anchor. So we're just going to see more and more and more of this. And really, the debates at the end of the day are going to be explosive, but I don't think that they're going to move too much. I think it really just comes down to who blunders most. And, you know, we've got two older candidates. Biden is pushing 80. Trump is pushing 80. They're in their late 70s. And I expect them to slip up a lot with this much pressure. What do you think about that?
They have to slip up. The scrutiny is incredible. The media is geared up to scrutinize the candidates, actually, as they always do. But you do have two gaffe-prone presidential candidates here, and they're going to be slip-ups. Whether it matters or not remains to be seen. You do raise a very interesting point, though. What worked for Donald Trump 4 years ago was running against the elite. And he will try to portray Joe Biden as the elite. And Biden has the burden of, in some ways, having to prove that there is no elite or that he is not among the elite. And that's going to be very difficult. Democratic National Committee, in many ways, is acting like the establishment, acting like the elite. And talk about populism, there's left-wing populism as well. Not so much Bernie Sanders, but the followers of Bernie Sanders, who absolutely must get out on the Democratic side in order for Biden to win. And if in some way they sense that Biden is part of a Democratic establishment that has no use for its progressive base, that could very well happen. That could dampen the turnout on the Democratic side. There's another issue that Biden faces, and that is identity politics. We talked about this in the earlier podcasts, that certainly on one side, what Biden has to do is tie up this loose end, this traditional progressive versus establishment battle within the Democratic Party. To some degree, he's doing that, although I've alluded to some problems that he faces. But the other problem that he faces is getting entrapped in identity politics. He's already indicated that he will select a woman, okay? Totally understandable. A lot of pressure building on him to nominate an African-American woman. And the difficulty is that as the leading African-American women who are finalists get scrutinized, you're hearing from some prominent folks that they in the Democratic Party that they will not support that African-American woman. So if we could, let's look at each. You have Kamala Harris, already controversial for having taken on Joe Biden. But you have actually one of the leaders of Biden's vetting team indicating that he really doesn't care for Kamala Harris, that Jill Biden doesn't care for Senator Harris, and that she's going to be a hard sell. Another very prominent name is Susan Rice. But two things about Susan Rice that have come up. She certainly has the foreign policy credentials, and perhaps the biggest credential of them all is the chemistry between Susan Rice and the vice president. The negatives are twofold. The one is dredging up the entire Benghazi story, which, you know, certainly is going to alienate and get a lot of yelling on the Republican side. Anyway, we know that. But it could raise some questions, even among swing voters, as to her viability. The other thing, and this is even more of a problem, is that she has a number of major investments, one of which is in one of the principal contractors with the Keystone Pipeline, which is something that really alienates progressives, really alienates Bernie Sanders' base, really alienates one of our clients and friends, right? Jane Klebb, head of the Democratic Party in Nebraska. There are folks that are saying that they will not support Susan Rice. So now we get to Karen Bass. That's a name that's been bandied about. She's a former speaker of the California Assembly, and she is now the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. And high points for good chemistry, getting along with Democrats and Republicans, showing some leadership. But her problem is one, I think, minor one, is that she used a title to describe Fidel Castro years ago. And that could very well still alienate Cuban voters, many of whom wouldn't, older Cuban voters who wouldn't vote Democrat anyway. Bigger problem is that she praised the Church of Scientology. And you're hearing from some Daily Kos, left-wing website, and MoveOn.org that they can't support Karen Bass. If it's an African-American woman, it's narrowing. The possibilities are narrowing. This is going to be a controversial decision. If it's not an African-American woman, Joe Biden better make that announcement and make it with Barack and Michelle Obama and Jim Clyburn, the powerful congressman from South Carolina, and as many Black leaders as he possibly can. But this is going to be a controversial decision next week, I think, no matter what.
And then, of course, there's the split in the party within the DNC. And Michael out of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, shared this incredibly important story with us that the DNC Rules Committee voted over whether they were going to get basically the corporate PAC money out of the party. And it was something like 100 to 48 or whatever it was, basically saying, oh, we're going to keep it like the way it is. We're not going to reject mm-hmm. that notion of big corporate PAC money. And so what does that do for the Bernie bros and the Bernie sisters? And what does that do to the Progressive Party? I mean, I can't see a situation really where on the left and on the Democratic side that Trump is so hated that some of the progressive wing and the Bernie wing are going to just say, you know, screw it, we're not going to vote at all. But it does reveal a major rift in the party. And how do you think that plays out, if it does play out at all in November?
It matters. It really does, because there are folks that are engaged in politics on the volunteer level, let alone on voting level and leadership levels, that that care about these sorts of things. They care about the Keystone Pipeline, but they also care about big money, corporate money, PAC money. Now, on one end of the argument, you can say, hey, look, we want to win, and we will use whatever resources the other side is using in order to win. On the other hand, there are those who make a claim to be principled and who say, yeah, but dirty money is dirty money, and are we any better than the other side? Corporate money can and too often does buy corporate influence in governance. And so it, at the very least, muddies the water, but it also hardens this problem between progressives, who are substantial in numbers in the Democratic Party, and the party establishment. How will it play out? Remains to be seen, but I have said right along, and I know that you have agreed, hating Donald Trump is not an agenda. It takes you only so far, I believe.
Well, look what it did in 2004, right? That was the same thing. But Bush, and that didn't work out. We'll move away from the domestic side of things. And of course, the biggest story, I think, all over the world right now, and going back to the day that it happened earlier this week, was the explosion in Beirut. Yeah. And so, of course, you know, within hours, you know, you could go to Twitter, you could go wherever, to whatever blog, and theories and conspiracy theories were running wild. But, you know, the dust, in a sense, has settled. And I think that I have at least an idea as to what could be going on here. But, Dad, because you're closer to Lebanon in terms of generations than I am. You know, you were the son of a Lebanese immigrant. I am third generation Lebanese American, or second generation. You give your take on it and tell us, our listeners, how you see this event playing out.
Well, first of all, this is a human tragedy of enormous proportions. The numbers are staggering. The numbers of deaths, injuries, and homeless. And so our hearts go out to the Lebanese, including members of our own family. Let me also say, only because this is important, I'm on the board of a group called Caritas Lebanon, Caritas Lebanon US. If you go to caritaslebanon.org, please make a contribution and be assured that it'll get on the ground where it should, directly to people who need homes and food. But in terms of this tragedy, I don't know that anything happens by accident in Lebanon. It's been everybody's battlefield now since World War II and since the Civil War that followed World War II. And so in that sense, then, everybody has got its fingers into Lebanon, and Lebanon is a country and a beautiful place unto itself, but it's also a metaphor for Middle East politics. Everybody fights their war there. There is Syria, there's Iran, domestically there's Hezbollah and the Maronite Catholic Church that are at odds, the Shias and Sunnis as well. There is Russia, back the Soviet Union and then Russia, and there's the United States and the West. And so you have to ask yourself, let's say this was simply an explosion, but immediately the blame goes to Russia, because that was a Russian ship. And it was a Russian ship that had docked there 7 years ago because of a battle between crew members, some Russian, some Ukraine. And so here are these 2,750 tons of ammonium nitrate that are parked in Lebanon all this time, and an ineffectual Lebanese government is pleading to get them out of there. Something is going to happen. But even in its most benign form, that explosion, those explosives should not have been there. But then it is the Middle East, and we have to think, don't we, a little bit further. Is there dirty work here at the crossroads? And that's what I'm trying to find out. I fear that there is, that this explosion taking place just at the same time that Hezbollah and Syria go on trial in the world court over the assassination 6 years ago of Rafiq Hariri, the then very powerful prime minister of Lebanon, perhaps the last functioning government that Lebanon had. All of which is I don't know, but I am thinking and I'm looking. What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking and I'm looking, and so let's establish first, and you've alluded to this, that we're talking about major tectonic plates in the world, geopolitical tectonic plates, if not, one of the epicenters of where there could be, basically like earthquakes, but I'm talking not the natural disaster, but the human disaster that is warfare. Let's establish that in the great game of chess, there are no good guys. We're talking, realpolitik, realism, Machiavellian realism, whatever you want to call it. Everybody has an interest in a geopolitically strategic place like Lebanon. I immediately, seeing the imagery of a mushroom cloud, thought and feared that looks like some kind of next generation mini hypersonic missile. It makes sense to me that 2,700 tons of ammonium citrate could do incredible damage. We know, though, that the explosion was heard and felt in Cyprus, which is at least 100 miles away. But you look to the news the next day, and specifically one article out of Reuters Thompson that focused the story on the French president Macron showing up. And one of the highlights of the article was that Macron promised to the suffering Lebanese people, we need a new political pact. Be ensured there will be a new political pact, which is, to me, basically code word for something like a regime change. I had feared immediately that this would be blamed on Hezbollah and Iran. Of course, at the end of the article, a random Lebanese citizen was quoted as saying, please get rid of Hezbollah. Now, look, with a culturally, religiously, and politically diverse place such as Lebanon, of all the people to be quoted at the end of the article, the icing on the cake at the article was to have that perspective, please get rid of Hezbollah, what I thought was pretty interesting. So it does appear to be, now you're saying the angle of Russia being blamed. Of course, Russia is tied to Syria. Syria mm-hmm. is tied to Iran. That's the axis right there. And then, of course, Iran funded by Hezbollah. I have a sneaky suspicion that combining the notion of what Macron said and that was reported in the article, that a new political pact is necessary. And remember, Lebanon was on its way to being a failed state. It was facing hyperinflation. Mm-hmm. It got to the point where a gallon of milk was $200. There was, earlier this year, we had talked about the mass protest on the streets in Beirut, where the youth, those who were, basically the equivalent of millennials and Gen Z, were calling for all government officials to step down. So they were already on shaky grounds and ripe for political revolution. Now this happens. Macron shows up. Macron says a new political pact. There's a quote from a citizen at the end of the article saying, get Hezbollah out of here. And then, as you pointed out, Dad, in another conversation I think we had last night, that there's already a petition going on mm-hmm. around for Lebanon to become a French protectorate. It sounds exactly like we're talking about the fingers, the hands trying to reach their way into Lebanon. It's a major, battle zone, or let's say there are many hands that want to grab Lebanon because of its strategic importance. And it looks right now the West, that could be NATO, that could be DC, that could be Israel, all of the above, are pulling Lebanon into the Western sphere of influence and away from Iran and Hezbollah.
Well, it certainly does look like that, Jer. Obviously need more information, but I learned in diplomatic history and in graduate school, who benefits? Those are the questions that you have to answer. Certainly not the Lebanese people at this point. The level of human suffering is beyond imagination. But in the final analysis, this is more than merely a human tragedy. It is a game of a political warfare, and again, Lebanese people lose. I am intrigued, though, about the petition, 52,000 signatures calling for a restoration of the French protectorate over Lebanon. That is clearly an effort to bring Lebanon back into the Western sphere. The preeminence of the Maronites, and you and I are Maronite Christians ourselves, and certainly understand that that sentiment, the sentiment against Hezbollah, which in many ways, despite its large political base and its leadership among suffering Shia in Lebanon, has played a very heavy-handed game, with Iran. And then lastly, let us not forget the hundreds of thousands of refugees in Little Lebanon. They're long-term Palestinians, over a decade of Iraqis, hundreds of thousands, and then finally Syrian refugees as well, all of which, poor metaphor, makes it a tinderbox, and it blew up this week.
It certainly did, and it's just one of the other countries in the Middle East to go down. I mean, it, of course, as I mentioned, with the hyperinflation and the political stalemate, which drove people out into the streets, unfortunately, sad to say, it was kind of like one of, you know, the remaining countries, although it was teetering on the brink. It was nothing like Syria. Mm-hmm. It was nothing like Iraq. And, well, I mean, you know, there is that potential where if people continue to point fingers, and they will, it just comes down to, you know, who is really behind this. And there will be all kinds of informational warfare and manipulation, manipulating the evidence. Unfortunately, it sounds like it could lead to a larger conflict that spills over. I hope that's not the case. But if there is a push to pull Lebanon into the Western Hemisphere or sphere of influence, rather, and that's, you know, Iran's not going to Iran, Syria, and Russia are probably not going to accept that so easily.
Well, wow. Two very important topics this week that we discussed. One about the political situation, including a look ahead at some possible vice presidential nominees. And then lastly, the very important issue of Lebanon. I say we covered a lot of ground. We'll see you next week, or we'll at least be talking next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.